is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Stormy rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here. We are very fired up today, Michael, because it is August 1st. Calendar is flipped. Preseason football starts tonight with a Hall of Fame game. And August means we are now about a month out from the start of the NFL actual regular season. So a great time all around whenever that calendar flips.
You can't wait, right? I mean, we get football from this Thursday all the way through to February, whether you like it or not. And I'm excited for it. So, yeah, it's good to have August come on the calendar. You know, enough summer fun. We get going with this football stuff. We'll get a game tonight, which I'm excited to watch and see the uniforms again. And life will go on. I'm anxious to watch this kickoff coverage team, how it's all going to work.
Seriously.
It's going to take a little bit of my eye to get used to it, but I'm excited for it.
That, I think, for many people will be an extremely enticing and exciting part of preseason football. It is the Bears and Texans tonight from the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. The football game in general, though, is part of this weekend. It is not really the focal point. It is the Hall of Fame induction, all the other events that go along with that. And as a result, because it is the extra preseason game for these two teams, we will not see starting quarterback Caleb Williams nor any of the Bears starters. That announcement was made about a day and a half ago, and that resulted in a flip of favorites here. Bears originally were the favorite, Michael. Texans now slight favorites. Total in the low 30s there. We're focusing, though, on some of these camp battles. And for Houston, probably the offensive line depth will be the most intriguing storyline to watch tonight, especially because the backup quarterbacks Houston has behind C.J. Stroud actually have a lot of NFL experience. So you'll know pretty early how that Texan offensive line, especially as some of the backups rotate in, just how far along they are based on the protections we'll see there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to see Blake Fisher, their second-round draft pick out of Notre Dame. He's going to get a chance to play left tackle. So that's something you want to evaluate. You know, and they've got a bunch of other guys. They traded for Kendrick Green from the Steelers this past year, so he's going to be in there. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can examine this line and, you know, and take a look at some players. Because, look, you're going to need linemen 6, 7, 8, 9 to help you. Look at the Browns last year. I mean, they were on linemen 9, 10, 11, and 12 by the end of their season. So you got to find some depth in the offensive line, knowing that Titus Howard never stays healthy, knowing that Tunsil's always been. Shaq Mason's an older player, over 30 years old. So they're going to have to find some depth. This is the perfect game to do it.
And it also leads into the battle of arguably biggest weaknesses for these two teams. Texans, it has been the offensive line. Chicago Bears, what are you getting on a D-line that had nothing until the midseason acquisition of Montez Sweat? There's a lot of guys you would think, Michael, who are in a position where with an impressive preseason, with a number of young players stepping up late last year for the Bears alongside Sweat, that's a huge opportunity amidst a defense that has a lot to prove amidst the season in 2023 where they did show tremendous improvement, but now you're trying to back it up going from the spoiler role late in the year when you had nothing to play for, nothing to lose, to now expectations that are a lot higher now for Chicago.
Well, look, I mean, they got 30 sacks last year. Six came after they made the trade for Sweat. You know, they are very similar to the Falcons. You know, they don't get any pass rush from their front seven. You know, the Sweat gave them 6 sacks. Walker gave them, you know, 3. Last year the kid from Indianapolis. He came in and gave him 4 sacks, but he's still a free agent on the street. They haven't come in, but there's really no one else. I mean, that's the problem with this Bear team. Everything is predicated on the rush, but they don't really have a good rush right now. So it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. They've got to find more defensive linemen. Brad Bakes told us that Dexter's bigger, stronger, more physical. Andre Billings, who they signed from the Falcons a couple of years ago, from the Raiders last year, you know, they're not getting any pass rush out of those guys. They got to have to get a 3 technique that can get up the field.
Probably Dexter, the biggest piece that the Bears inside the building are high on. You had Zach Pickens, who came on pretty strong, but those are now, you know, year 2 guys. And you wonder, okay, now that you're going into year 2 again, expectations tend to rise there for Chicago team that got Jones and Gakwe. Those were second and third on the list last year with 4.5 and 4 respectively, Michael. But you're only talking about one single player, Walker at 3.5, too. One player with more than 5, and that was Montez Sweat, who was added midseason there for the Chicago Bears. Again, that line right now sitting Texans minus 1.5. 31.5 is your total. A lot of thought generally as you just back the under, but there's actually been the last couple of years, overs have cashed in here, and that's where we always say tread lightly on this stuff as far as your bankroll goes, because we have tended to see some very random sort of flukish second half results, even though respected groups have been on the under in these situations. Sportsbooks have adjusted. This was a total that used to be in the high 30s for the Hall of Fame game. Now it's low 30s at best, but the last 2 years it has gone over. Previously, though, a very good profitable under run, 7-2 the previous 9 years to the under.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what receive. You know, obviously they've got, you know, Robert Woods is on their team. He carries a huge cap number. I don't expect he to hit him play. John Michie the third, they've got to get something out of him. Second round pick in 22, they really haven't because of the medical situation with him. Skoranek, who they claimed off the waiver wire from the Rams, they're going to play him. So, you know, they've got Davis Mills, they've got Case Keenum, and obviously the great Tim Boyle from Black Friday of the Jets is going to be out there. But again, it's going to come down to can this line protect and what do they have with this offensive line? Usually when you watch a team like the 49ers or the Kyle Shanahan tree, which Bobby Slowick comes from, is usually they can run the ball. There's always a back somewhere where you feel like, okay, this guy could really make their team. So we'll see if they have that and if they've improved their run game in the zone scheme.
First look for two very, very hyped teams coming into 2024 for different reasons, but still both high expectations for the Texans and the Bears. We also did get some news of the day here, Michael, as far as contract extensions. A player that has been on the mind of a lot of evaluators over the last week, that's Tristan Wirfs, anchor of a Tampa Bay Buccaneer offensive line that has been up and down, plagued with injuries, inconsistencies over the last couple of years, viewed to be a middle of the pack to slightly below average O-line, but Wirfs does get his deal done as that anchor to protect Baker Mayfield's blindside at QB. Highest paid now offensive lineman in the league here as he surpasses the previous couple guys that were right around his range, just over $28 million now a year, pulling up the updated contract, passes Penei Sewell, 5 years, just over $140 on that contract extension. And it was a deal that the Bucs, after investing so heavily in Baker Mayfield, previously investing in Mike Evans at wide receiver, trying to bolster this offense that has been plagued with inconsistency, you had to do this, and Wirfs, as we expected, Michael, now is locked up here for the next few years.
Well, Graham Barton, the first-round pick, starts at center. Cody Mauch, the second-round pick from last year, starts at right guard. And Luke Gotta-Dee, he starts at right tackle, 22nd second-round pick. So they've got three – they have two number ones in the line, two number twos, and they got Ben Brenson, who's a free agent from the Giants. So this line has to improve at some point, you know, because they're 32nd team in rushing. They have not been able to run the football effectively in the last two seasons. And it starts with this line, but they had to get Wirfs handled. I mean, he's a really good player. He's their best lineman. He's a left tackle. He can block anybody in the division, including Brian Burns, handily. He does a good job in that area. And so, you know, they had to get this thing done. And I think obviously it was something. Now, this is going to impact, this will impact the future contracts moving forward. Trent Williams specifically, because Trent right. Williams now is way further down. That draft class, Andrew Thomas got paid. Darrishaw got paid, right? You know, we see Wirfs get paid. Now it's going to come time for Trent Williams to come in and get paid as well.
And with the age of Trent Williams, you figure the longevity of a contract will not be the same as somebody of, say, a Tristan Wirfs, who's a younger player getting a longer deal done. But it's more the average annual value now for Williams. Where does that now set your expectation here, Michael, now that we've really seen the last dominoes to drop as far as potential offensive linemen getting their extensions?
I think this is more about guaranteed money, Ben, than it is about average per year, right? I mean, you can make average per year anything you want. They could make them $35 million a year if they just put $50 million, $50 million, $50 million. None of it's guaranteed, and he gets cut, right? So this is really just about guaranteed money, and he's going to want some guarantees. It's a little bit like what they did with – look, let's face it. You know, when they redid Matt Stafford's contract, they didn't put a bunch of money in there. They just guaranteed a little bit more money for him, which is what these players want at this age, you know. And so I think that's where Trent Williams wants more guarantee, and he's going to get it. Obviously, that'll help him out.
Now we wait on the San Francisco front. Multiple fronts for San Francisco. Trent Williams, one of the big pieces there on that offensive line. We're also talking, too, about how with it being the Hall of Fame game tonight, that is just one of the many ceremonies going on. The one that is most impactful, though, is the Hall of Fame induction that will happen into Friday night and Saturday here. And I know you wanted to share some thoughts, too, on this class of 2024 with some great, great names on it and some players, too. Like, for people like me, you know, growing up in the early 90s, these were a lot of guys that really shaped, you know, for someone like me, NFL viewing, just unbelievably exciting, game-changing type players when you think about a Dwight Freeney, a Devin Hester, and Andre Johnson. And of course, the Julius Peppers, who had just an unbelievable display of athleticism coming into the league, not unlike something we've seen really at all in the past, and that defensive line position, and then Patrick Willis, of course, the other player getting inducted. Kind of surreal for me as a child of the early 90s, Michael, to see these five in particular get inducted.
Yeah, I mean, Freeney particularly, because I can remember doing Freeney coming out, and I was a huge Freeney guy, and one of the scouts for the Raiders thought, you know, he's a nickel, he's a dime a day player, and I'm thinking, man, we're watching the different game here, because you know Freeney was undersized at Syracuse, he wasn't a big man, and nobody could understand it. In that draft, they not only got Freeney, but they got Robert Mathis. Tony Dungy scheme really fit Freeney really well, and so they were able to pull that off. Peppers, to me, was so unique in terms of size, speed, could do all the different things, could play up, down, you know, and Andre Johnson was one of those receivers that you take early in the draft that is a blue chip player, that is a X receiver who you've got to double on every single play. And so it's a great class. I was happy to see Gratishire get in, Steve McMichael certainly. I'm disappointed Buddy Parker didn't get in as one of the selections, but I never understand what the Hall of Fame committee's voters do anyway.
And that's also a good point on top of that. Very good class for those five we just mentioned as well that will be inducted here this weekend. We'll have a lot more football to get to, including college football, because today is a huge day for us at VSiN. We'll tell you about our big guest list coming up as well, and also discuss the newly released college football betting guide, which is out now as we get things underway on the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the college football playoff Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which teams will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by downloading the newly released 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets from our writers, hosts, and personalities are just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our NFL Betting Guide, which has been out now for about a month, and an all-access pass to daily best bets. Full access to our exclusive betting splits as well. Check out all the current offers right now at vsin.com/subscribe. Special day for us today, Michael. While we are very excited that we're just over a month out from the start of the NFL regular season, 23 days from the start of college football, week zero coming up in just over a few weeks. So the guide is out now. We have a couple of really good guests coming up to break down the guide for us in about 15 minutes. Mike Somich from The Handle. You see weekends here on VSiN, noon to 3 Eastern. Mike's set to join us in about 15 minutes. We'll also get Matt Eumanns from VSiN Tonight coming up in our second hour, 2:15 Eastern. And as always on Thursdays, it is Mike Palm, VP of Operations for Circa, the Golden Gate, and the D. We'll be in here at 2:30 Eastern in studio. Excited to see one Mr. Palm. But I know you've started your reading, Michael. 212 pages for the college football guide that is out now. We've got all 134 Division I FBS teams broken down and Heisman Trophy predictions as well, which is a super deep market this year, especially given there is no obvious frontrunner here heading into 2024.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is comprehensive is the right word to use when you talk about the guide, because, you know, in college, we don't get a transactional wire every day. We don't know who's moving from A to B to C. I was looking at the University of Florida the other day, and the right tackle for Florida, I can remember watching him when he was the right tackle for San Diego State, and I kind of lost where he ended up, you know? And so I think to me, because of that, you really need the guide is so good at being able to handicap not only the games, but handicap the roster and handicap give you the betting odds. And I think to me, you can focus on the conferences that you love. Like I love the MAC, and I think there's money to be made in the MAC. I think we've proven that over the course of the Lombardi Line when we used to be at the Borgata. And we were hitting Kent State every week. We were hitting Akron every week when they were bad. And Rutgers before they were when they were bad. So I think sometimes you can't they can't handicap bad well enough at the book.
Right.
And this guide will help you find out what is bad.
Wes Reynolds is one of our writers who broke down the MAC in depth. We have a bunch of different writers who contributed here. I really like you talked, too, about trying to track all the transfers now that the portal era has really taken over college football, the different personnel changes, the recruiting. Steve Mackinnon does a great job, has his stability scores breaking down. Okay, which teams returned a lot, which starting production is back and what matters, and which teams are really in trial by fire this year of bringing in tons of new players through the transfer portal. Steve covered that. We also have Matt Eumanns' preseason top 25. We'll get into that with Matt in a little bit. And then Zach Cohen was the one who broke down our Heisman Trophy as well, and a bunch of other writers here breaking down individual conferences. I think to me, as we go into this guide, the conference that fascinates me the most, well, yes, MAC will always have great action, Michael, especially once we get that the midweek MACtion games going in later into the conference part of the year. But the Big 12, I can't wait to see how this all plays out with a bunch of new teams in. You have Utah as the conference favorite, slightly over Kansas State. But most experts you look at, and this is corroborated in the guide, feel that upwards of 9-10 teams have a legitimate shot to, at the very least, be in the conversation for the Big 12 title game and are very, very live to go over win totals. That does obviously not mean everybody will go over because somebody has to lose, but that's a conference that has the most variance to me of any, Michael, amidst those new Power Four this year.
Yeah, it's going to see how they get used to the, you know, the physicality, right? The Big 12 has not been known as a physical conference in the past, but I think that changes, right? I think with Utah coming in, I think Utah certainly has a way to they're going to play a different – Utah plays, to me, a Big Ten game, right? And I think that's something that we're not used to seeing. And there's so many good teams. I mean, remember, 2 years ago, TCU was playing for the national championship. Oklahoma State is a good team. Again, Kansas State, you know, they're another team that's tough-nosed, hard-edged. I think even though they lost their starting quarterback to Ohio State – you know, they bring a quarterback in that they feel like is going to make the world flip upside down, Avery Johnson. So I think the Big 12 is going to be a lot of fun. You know, and Arizona with Noah Fajita and McMillan, the wide receiver, that's as good a combination. Look, they beat Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl last year. They're better on defense than they've ever been. I'm excited to see the Big 12. I really am.
I was listening to an interview with Phil Steele, who does a great job. He's well known as the college football, the preview magazine guy, really, for lack of a better term. He was on with Tim Murray, our college football betting podcast. He was saying Arizona, were it not for the loss of head coach Jed Fish and a couple of starters he brought with him up to Washington, probably the favorite to win this league. And that speaks to the quality of depth in the conference, where all of a sudden Arizona loses a couple pieces. They slide all the way down to seventh favorite on the odds board. 11 of our 16 experts did select Utah to win the Big 12. I did not. I'll talk about the team I like in that conference a little bit. I have some best bets as well in the guide, too, Michael. But the one conference that we did have the most agreement on was the SEC, as deep as that league is perceived to be. Still, Georgia viewed to be the top dogs. 12 of the 16 experts picking Georgia to reign supreme again in the SEC. I certainly believe it's hard to go against Kirby Smart, especially with the motivational edge you have after being snubbed last year, the shock loss in the SEC title game to Alabama. But you are higher than most, I would say, Michael, on Alabama and what quarterback Jalen Milroe can represent in year number one under Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, no, look, they took some hits. There's no question they took some hits off defensively, losing the safety to Ohio State. But I think you would be really naive to believe that this team isn't really talented. Now, Mississippi is a team that has garnered a lot of the attention. They took the best player off Florida's team in the defensive front. They spent a lot of money this offseason at Ole Miss. And I think Ole Miss is, especially when you look at their schedule, you know, their schedule is so good that they're not going to really – I think the first game you're going to see where it could be a difficult game is, I think, week 7 or something. Like, you know, it's like when they get LSU, they have to go to LSU. That's the hardest game of the conference for them as they start off the year. And they were 11-2 last year. So this is a really good team with a quarterback, Jackson Dart, coming back, two runners, receivers. They're very good. So – I'm anxious to see how they hold up, how Lane Kiffin, but they open up Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, and then a good Kentucky team at the end of September. We'll find out. Then they play South Carolina, and then they go to the LSU. You know, that's not a hard schedule for them, but I think there is certainly a team that could get in this, and I think this Kentucky team can't be overslept. They've got a lot of pro prospects on Kentucky's team this year.
Kentucky was a team that narrowly went over the 6.5 win total last year, needed to upset Louisville as a touchdown dog on the last day of the regular season. I remember that, Michael, because I love Kentucky last year, yet they'd never really got the quarterback play they were hoping for. Lots of injuries continued to plague that Kentucky roster, but the talent has still always been there, and that's why they ended up under Mark Stoops as head coach, still going bowling pretty comfortably, ending up getting to 7.5. With everything in the SEC, it always comes down to scheduling this year. The one team I would mention that a lot of people are high on too, Michael, is Missouri, because they're the one team that has the soft schedule in the SEC, and that's the one thing you always have to break down in this league.
I was just going to bring that up. I mean, they've got, you know, Eli Drinkwitz has done a wonderful job there. They've got a quarterback in Cook. They've got the best receiver in the country, perhaps, you know, there. And so this is a really good offense with Luther Burden leading the way, and they just defensively, but look, they open up Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vanderbilt. They have to go to A&M. They come back for Ole Miss. I mean, Massachusetts, excuse me. And then they have Auburn at home before they go to Alabama. I mean, there's a realistic chance they could go into Tuscaloosa with just one loss or undefeated.
Very realistic for a Missouri team that, as my alma mater, our producer, Lee Bowman's alma mater, we're not used to this sort of preseason hype. It's a little bit weird, Michael. I got to admit, I'm taking it back.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did a great job last year, and, you know, defensively, they lost some guys defensively, but I think Eli's done a really good job. Look, he won at Appalachian State. It took him a little time to get this thing going here at Missouri, but I think Missouri is finally back on track, and I think they've got enough roster talent to be able to compete. The problem with the Missouris, the Mississippis, the Kentuckys, it isn't that they don't have the frontline players to play Alabama and Georgia or Ohio State or Michigan. The problem is they have no depth, right? Is when they lose guys, all of a sudden that loss really affects their team and affects the fourth quarter of some of these games. That's where they get hurt the most, is the overall depth. You talk to any of the coaches in the Southeast Conference, they feel very comfortable when they're healthy playing the best teams. The problem is in week six, when they're not healthy and they're with backups or freshmen, going into Tuscaloosa is not easy.
It's the same reason why you're seeing so much anti-Florida sentiment in the market. A lot of shops have dropped that win total all the way down to 4.5. I'm really high on what Florida will have talent-wise, but it is unquestionably the toughest schedule in the country this year. A lot of people who followed schedules for a while would tell you this might be the toughest schedule in the last decade for Florida. So it's a team I'll be looking to bet on early in the year, Michael, but it's a classic example of what you just laid out. Would we be talking the same thing about Missouri if they had a Florida-esque schedule? No way. It's so much of this is predicated on the timing, who you play, how it impacts your depth as a whole. Makes the SEC fascinating. And we didn't even mention Texas and Oklahoma, who are new into the league this year.
Yeah, I mean, and I keep thinking, you know, if Missouri stayed in the Big 12 like they used to, they win that. They probably would win that easy, wouldn't they?
They would, very at the very least, probably be co-favorites with Utah, I would think, based on the talent coming into this year. We'll have a lot more college football breakdown still to come. Also, some thoughts on how to bet the Hall of Fame game from our Mike Somich, host of The Handle on the weekends. He joins us next. Rolling on the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line College Football Betting Guide release day here on the network. Super exciting day as well. I'm Ben in for Stormy rest of the week. Michael Lombardi is here. Fresh episode of the GM Shuffle. Look out for that later today. I ran into Femi earlier. He's on his way to Oxnard as we speak, Michael. So Femi's a lot of passion. He's ready to go.
He's got to get them straightened out. At least they'll have one fan in the stands. Ben, I was shocked at how little of people are interested in the Cowboys, aren't you?
I was too. But look, Femi is going to make up for all of the absences there. Femi on his way there. We hope Femi has a great, great trip up to California. And speaking of California, we go out to our Progressive guest line right now. You see him weekends on The Handle, noon to 3 Eastern time with Matt Brown. It is Mike Somich who joins us right now from the great state of California. And it is a happy betting guide release date to you as well, sir. I don't know how many of the 212 pages you have inhaled already, but always a great time whenever we get a fresh guide out.
Yeah, I have not gotten through too much of it yet. However, I am excited for it to be out. College football, one of the toughest sports for me to really dive into when it's this early in the preseason, when you get that month before it, because there's so much turnover, so much change that it takes a long time to formulate those opinions. So I love having a resource like the Betting Guide where I can read through a lot of people's whose opinions I respect and then kind of formulate my own based on some of those ideas. So excited to dive into it. And I got to say, maybe I should go visit Femi. I'm only like an hour away from him. Just a quick little drive south on the 101. I could be there down there at Cowboys camp as well.
There's nothing quick on the 101, Mike. Let's be clear. There's no quick little drive on the 101. All right. What is your favorite conference to really like lay your teeth into and get to know in college football?
Man, I love Maction, so I love the Mac, but that to me is really hard, especially in the offseason, because you have so much movement around the transfer portal. I think the SEC is probably the most interesting conference this year just because of how much depth you have. If you look at the Heisman market, you've got six quarterbacks in the top eight inside that market. That becomes really interesting. And to me, the other one, really the Big 12, you guys were talking about this little last segment, feels like it's wide open, that you could see a lot of different teams kind of come out of that Big 12. And Utah's insertion into that conference is going to be very interesting. You're going to have teams playing at elevation for the first time in a long time in the Big 12 there. And you also have just a different style of football that's going to be introduced into that conference. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out once we get into the meat of that Big 12 schedule as well.
A number of teams in the SEC we were just talking about, the Missouri Tigers being hyped. And for different reasons across this conference, you have teams that are clearly very good talent-wise, Mike, but the schedule is just a gauntlet. It brings us to Ole Miss, who have a difficult schedule this year, but the hype around the talent for head coach Lane Kiffin has never been higher. What do you make of the Rebs this year as a team who are getting a lot of buzz to make the college football playoff?
You guys talked about schedule a lot last segment as well. And to me, that's really the key here with this Ole Miss team. I like the schedule and how it drew. It's not the easiest schedule, but when I'm looking at teams I want to play over or under, I'm always looking specifically at the road games. And when you look through how this plays out from a road perspective for them, they drew pretty easy here of an Ole Miss side. They've got Florida at home. They've got Arkansas, or they got Florida on the road. They've got Arkansas on the road. If you look at their home games here, the two tough games, Georgia and Oklahoma, if they go 1-1 in those two games, and I think they have a very good shot at beating Oklahoma, Georgia, I think, is much taller of a task there. 11-1, 10-2 is very much in the sights here for this Ole Miss team. And the win total sitting at 9.5 right now. I think they can take care of business on the road. And when I find a schedule where I feel like they can take care of business on the road, to me, it's all about whether or not you have multiple games you think they can get popped at home. And I just don't see that for this Ole Miss team. I think it actually drew fairly well for them that all the difficult games are at home. Assuming we can split those games, it looks like a team that's a pretty easy one to take the over 9.5 win total there.
So you've looked over the Heisman market, and what is your favorite play picking the Heisman, knowing you've got to make an investment for a long season and have a lot of things go your way? But what were your candidates and who did you end up with?
I think this is a really interesting Heisman year. Last year, you had three guys to me who really stood out even preseason. Maybe you could make it four or five if you want to count guys like yours and Klubnik there and Clemson. But this year, it feels just absolutely wide open. Like I mentioned, you had six quarterbacks there from the SEC inside of the top eight choices. That means that there's going to be a lot of those quarterbacks that kind of take away the opportunity from other players. You're going to have situations where it's just you're going to be forced to have some attrition because those teams are going to lose outside of that conference. And you don't have that standout. To me, you know, Dillon Gabriel, I've seen enough of him. I just don't think he's going to be able to put up the numbers, even though he should be very good up at Oregon. Back at Georgia, I think he's good. But is he really that Heisman level good? To me, you got to go outside of the SEC here if you're looking for someone. And the first one that jumps off the board to me, Will Howard at Ohio State. He played well at Kansas State. He's a run threat. He's a passing threat. He's got all this talent around him. And I think Ohio State goes undefeated inside that conference. I think they're probably the number one seed heading into the playoff here. So I like Will Howard as a candidate here, 15-1 to win the Heisman. And if you want to win the Heisman, you're going to have to make the playoffs. So you kind of look at quarterbacks of teams who you think can make the playoffs. And the other one to me that jumps out is Avery Johnson there at Kansas State. He was absolutely electric last year in the games that he actually played. He only really threw the football once. That was in the bowl game where he was able to win MVP, threw for about 170 yards. But he had a 5-touchdown game on the ground last year. This is going to be a guy who's going to put up dynamic numbers both through the air and on the ground for a Kansas State team that, if they can win that Big 12, all of a sudden is in that conversation around the playoff and a team that I think is going to be underrated heading into the season as well. So Avery Johnson, 25-1, Will Howard, 15-1 are the two players I want to target for the Heisman.
Mike Somich with us right now on the Lombardi line. K-State, that second favorite coming out of the Big 12, just under 4-1. And you have Ohio State of our 16 experts, 6 selecting Ohio State, most of any team to win the national championship. Is that your selection, Mike? Or are you looking at a different one of the blue bloods here, so to speak, in the Power Four to take it all this year?
I mean, I think it's going to be chalky. I think one of the interesting things about the 12-team playoff is we're going to have a lot of fun games in that first round, that are really kind of inconsequential, because it's Georgia and Ohio State, in my mind, are the best two teams. We're going to see them push forward. I think Oregon probably ends up in the top four as well. But I think we're going to have a lot of blowouts there in the second round, because you're going to have teams that have to go and face these elite teams that are waiting for them. To me, it's Georgia, Ohio State, and the number on neither on both of them is not big enough to really entice me to get into the market. So I don't have anybody to win it all. If you ask me who my pick would be, it would be Georgia there, sitting at 3-1, but not a price that's high enough in my mind to be able to bet it right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I think that, you know, I know we're going to go through the guide and do all that, but it's kind of hard to really make the predictions moving forward until you kind of see it. We don't get preseason to kind of handle that. Now, we have preseason tonight, and we're going to see a bunch of the backups play. But what's your expectation for the Houston Texans this year? Are you buying it? Or are you selling?
I think I'm one of the bigger sellers on the Texans, and that's not because I don't think they have some talent. I just think the schedule is completely different than what they faced last year. You go back and you look last year, and everyone remembers the playoffs, right? And that playoff win against Cleveland. Well, were you sure Cleveland was really that good going into that playoff game? Like, is that something that we really want to hype them up over? And then you look through who they beat last year. They had zero wins in the regular season against playoff teams. And that was against a fourth place schedule. Now you flip over, you got to play a first place schedule. You're going to have to play some serious quarterbacks. Look at the quarterbacks they faced last year. Lamar Jackson was the best quarterback they faced. That was week one. After that, like, Baker Mayfield was the next best quarterback that they faced. This year, they've got to face a lot of tougher teams, a lot tougher quarterbacks. I just think it's going to be a very different experience with the Texans. And because of the hype we're getting on them, we're seeing them as high as minus 180 toward their over. I just can't say that this is going to be a 10-win team and pencil it in. It kind of reminds me of Jacksonville last year, to be honest, mm-hmm. where they won that playoff game against the Chargers, came back, all this hype with Lawrence coming into his third year, and they just weren't that good. I'm kind of afraid that with a first-place schedule here, we're going to see Houston be not that good. Now, all that being said, I love betting preseason football because I feel like you can find advantages from a quarterback perspective, and tonight's game really jumps out to me in that sense. We're not going to see Caleb Williams. We're not going to see C.J. Stroud, which means we're going to get a lot of Tyson Bagent in the first half and then Brett Rippon and Austin Reed in the second half for the Bears. On the Texans side, you're going to see Davis Mills and then Case Keenum and Tim Boyle come in. I think there's a huge advantage at QB3 and QB4, specifically there with the experience that you get from Case Keenum, the experience you get from Tim Boyle, and what they've been able to do in the regular season in the NFL. So I like the Texans tonight laying the 1.5. I like the Texans' second half even more. To me, Texans' second half, Texans' third quarter, focusing in on that Case Keenum time is the best way to bet tonight's game.
That's a really good piece, too, of actionable advice, because there are the markets out there. You can bet quarter by quarter, looking into the halftime markets as well. There was a lot of money taken in on the Texans, at least for preseason standards, enough to flip that. Texans laying 1.5 now against the Bears. 31 or 31.5-ish is the total there. Yeah, we've had a lot of AFC South talk this week, Mike. Who do you like to actually come out of that division if Texans are a more of a seller team based on that sixth toughest strength of schedule there, according to the Vegas win totals?
Yeah, when you factor in price, I think that's kind of whenever you're talking about who do you like to win the division, I'm always factoring in price because I'm betting on this stuff, right? I if you say who's the most likely team, yeah, the Texans are the most likely team to win. But I think the Colts are the ones that are mispriced here. The Colts were a dropped fourth down conversion away from winning this division last year. They face a softer schedule. I think there's more upside with them because we get Anthony Richardson. And look, I'm a Shane Steichen guy. I loved what he did with that team last year. I think they're going to be able to run the football. I like Pittman. You get a compliment on the outside with the rookie receiver that they get. To me, it's always about all about Anthony Richardson's health. But over 3-1, the Colts are the best bet in that division to me when you think about implied odds to be able to actually win it.
Yeah, great stuff from Mike Somich joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Follow him at SomoBomb18 for great plays on the horse racing track every single day. Always great to get the SomoBomb out and out there. We'll see you on Saturday, Mike. Thanks as always for the time here.
You got it,
thanks,
guys.
Mike.
Have a good one.
The Handle, 12-3 Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays here on VEASAN. Great stuff on betting the preseason. Really good actionable info as well, because you can bet those quarterly, those half markets well in advance. We will discuss more of the NFL in a little bit with our very favorite segment, No Way or No Doubt. A lot of good topics on that today, Michael. We'll dive into it right after this. Right now on our new look, VEASAN.com, all sorts of content on tonight's Hall of Fame game, whether it is Steve Mackinnon breaking down all the recent trends, Adam Burke on what to expect from the backups who play. Also, Matt Eumanns breaking down not only tonight's game, but also all of the preseason quarterback depth charts around the NFL heading into this preseason. We have that along with best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides like our college football guide just released today. with 23 days until the start of the college football season, 35 until we get to the start of NFL regular season football here on VSiN.com.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubts. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
Been waiting for this all week, Michael. Here we go. No way or no doubt. We have to start in Big D with the Cowboys. This, to me, is probably the hardest one to answer definitively because it's Jerry Jones. Who knows what is going on through his mind and what they will actually do. But no way or no doubt here, two or more of the Cowboys' trio of pending contracts with quarterback Dak Prescott, wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, and top defender Micah Parsons. Two or more of those three will go into the regular season without a new deal, Michael. No way or no doubt.
No doubt. Yeah, I don't see him getting Parsons done or Prescott done. I think the only one who has a chance to get done is CeeDee Lamb. Now, Schefter was just on McAfee today talking about how Brandon Ayuk, they're not even close to getting a deal done. It's not happening. Some people think Lamb is, but I don't see it. I don't see that they're going to get Prescott done or Parsons done. So I think both those guys are going to have to play on their contract. There's no question.
It seems like of the three, the one that's probably the most up in the air as far as timing-wise would be the Prescott, simply because it's a quarterback. Do you feel like pressure comes in and they say, all right, we just really want this done by the start of the year? Where I'm with you, Parsons does not seem close. Reports indicate that Lamb is the most likeliest, but like if you were saying one, okay, yeah, you feel confident. I mean, two, I feel like it's 50-50 at best for Prescott, and that's probably not a spot you want to be in going into this year if you're Prescott, at least from the agency part.
I think reverse, though, Ben. I don't think Prescott wants to get a deal done. Like, yeah. I don't think he wants to get one done. I think he kind of just wants to go through the season. He's not worried about injury. He's focused on the game, and he's in the draft. I mean, he's negotiated no franchise. So he has everything to gain by playing it out.
And be the next Kirk Cousins. Get that 1 year. Get that bet on yourself. I realize it's a bit apples to oranges, but it's a similar principle there for Dak Prescott this year. No way, no doubt. We're talking guys without contracts yet, at least, as far as extension goes. The two big ones in San Francisco, the left tackle Trent Williams and the wide receiver Brandon Ayuk, both looking for new deals. Trent Williams is more important to the 49ers team than Brandon Ayuk. Michael, to me, there's no doubt about it that Trent Williams, without him, this offensive line is one of the worst in the league. I say this is an easy one.
I think it is. And look, I think the 49ers are at the point with Brandon Ayuk. They've tried their best. They can't get it done. And life goes on. And either he takes the deal or not. But, I mean, he's acted as if he's Randy Moss out there. Like, seriously. You know, they're going to get on without him, and I think life will go on without him if they have to. Will that mean anything? Look, one thing I've learned a long time ago, the 49er uniform is going to be good. They're going to be good with or without Brandon Ayuk. They may not win a Super Bowl, but they're going to be good with or without him.
Like, you take Ayuk out, and it's a team that everybody around the league would agree, even with, you know, obviously with Ayuk in, this is the best collection of pass catchers in the NFL. If Ayuk's not on the team anymore, well, you still have the best running back room in the league, largely because of Christian McCaffrey. You still have the most dynamic set, especially at the tight end position with where George Kittle is at, his ability to stretch the field, even how they've been able to use guys like Kyle Juszczyk, so many different elements and weapons to throw at him in the passing game. It's still easily a top five, top 10 unit, whereas the fall off without Williams, who's really just holding together this line right now, Michael, it is unbelievably stark. So that's an easy one for us here on No Way or No Doubt. How about this one from Pittsburgh? Justin Fields will start at quarterback at some point for the Pittsburgh Steelers this season. No way or no doubt.
You know, there's a word out today that he's looking good. I think he will start a game. I don't think Russell will be able to stay healthy the whole year. So give me that one. I would say there is no doubt he probably will.
To me, it's more than no doubt. It's you have to start setting an over-under on how many games that you end up seeing Russell Wilson miss this year, or at the very least you see Fields start. Like, I don't know, I would set that number at probably 3.5, 4.5, and probably lean over on Fields. I certainly believe the early reports clearly indicate that the leash is going to be as short as anybody in the league for Russell Wilson. I can think Mike Tomlin owes anything to either of those guys, has any sort of past history where he feels like they're deserving of second and third chances. No way.
No,
I mean, that's
not
how it is.
But here's what I worry about, Ben. If Wilson protected the ball last year, if Fields doesn't protect the ball, then I've got some real issues. You know, because Mike Tomlin's not going to tolerate somebody that doesn't protect the football. There's no question about that.
And especially with the schedule that the Steelers have to face, toughest in the NFL, you know there's no real room for any of the lack of ball control to happen. And that's where you're seeing Fields start here, number two. But you got to think he'll get a shot at some point. No way or no doubt here into NFL training camp week one. And it's always, it would not be training camp unless we had the kind of ridiculous, okay, let's make mountains out of a molehill sort of moments here. Aaron Rodgers getting into it with Garrett Wilson on the sideline. Jets fans should be worried about Rodgers and Wilson's animated sideline discussion, as you can see on your screen from New York Jets media. No way or no doubt on that one.
No way. I mean, look, it's basically football, and there's going to be some conflict. It's practice. There's going to be some things that don't go well, and there's going to be some conversations. And sometimes, you know, those conversations get animated, but there's no way this is going to disrupt their team at all. No way.
100%. The other thing that people don't seem to really be adding as part of context of the story, you would argue that on paper, roster-wise, the Jets have the best defense, the structure on their team, at least the starters in the NFL. Like, you're going to see that Jets offense struggle in camp because they're going against dudes on the other side. And it's also a new offensive line that's unproven, at least meshing together so far, Michael. So this was inevitable, and there's no way that it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I think to me that's the thing. I mean, like, look, they just have to be smart. I mean, you want to play fast. You want to get the lead. I think if I'm the Jets, if I were Robert Saleh, I would be all over the fact that, look, we've got to find a way to get ahead. We got to play from in front, use our pass rush, create some turnovers, use the strength of our defense to become stronger. If 100%. We're in these tight games back and forth, then it won't be as effective. So for me, I think that's what they have to do.
Talking no way or no doubt on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line as the calendar flips to August. With the calendar flipping, it means now camp about to be open, not only for NFL as it already is, but college football. And you see this, Dylan Raiola, the five-star quarterback, expected to start for Nebraska. A lot of hype for him this year. And he's going with the full Mahomes showing up to campus in Lincoln, Nebraska. No way or no doubt, Raiola is college football's next Patrick Mahomes, not only apparently with the wardrobe, but also on the field.
Well, I mean, I think to me it's interesting we talk about that because, you know, he comes out of high school with way more publicity than, remember, Mahomes is a three-star kid. Yeah. He wasn't even that highly recruited. So I think to me it'll be interesting how that all comes out. But I do think, you know, he comes with size, speed, and those credentials that are really impressive. And I would be surprised if he wasn't a really good player.
I think that is all true. I would also say no way from the standpoint of think about the system they're in. I mean, you're going, it's not like this is Texas Tech and Raiola's going to get to throw 60 times a game, putting up video game numbers in a, you know, legit NFL type system. I mean, this is Matt Rhule coming in. Has been proven as a builder of programs, but it's all about physicality for Nebraska, trying to assert their dominance in a Big Ten where you need to have that to have a lot of success. So at least for now, there's a long way to go. Let's temper our expectations a little bit for a freshman who does have a lot of hype. And clearly, as you mentioned, Michael has the size and strength. Yeah, no doubt on that. All right, this also goes into our college football betting guide, which is now out today. No way or no doubt, Alabama, their chances of repeating as SEC champs are better than their betting odds indicate. No way or no doubt, not the favorites this year, with Georgia overwhelmingly expected to reassert the claim to the SEC.
I think for sure they're I think they may not be a favorite, but I think they have to be somebody to reckon with. I really do, and I think they can be very good. And I have faith in Caden DeBoer. I really do. I think he's got a chance to be. He's been a good coach. He's coached in big games. He took all the best players with him. So I think there's certainly a chance that they can be, they're overlooked. I really believe that.
Certainly the thought is, if you're Kalen DeBoer, you took a Washington program that was a mess in many regards and win 25 games over 2 years, including a trip to the national championship game. You got to think, when you inherit the boat of riches that Alabama gets, is maybe, even though they might not have been at the absolute top with Nick Saban retiring, you have to feel like that's a very, very advantageous position to be in. Just pulling up the updated SEC odds right now, Alabama currently here sitting just behind the expectation of Georgia to win it all. They're just behind Texas as well. So third favorite, I would probably say, based on the pedigree, you got to put him second there ahead of Texas. And I would agree. It is no doubt that they have some value on them heading into this year. 15-1 to win it all for the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll reset, get into hour number two, and get into what is on Michael's mind for this Thursday.